Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1981 Bond film For Your Eyes Only, directed by John Glenn.
Sweet.
But first, let's do a little stage setting. And Brother Drew, welcome back. Sorry about last week's timing not working out for anybody.
No, I'm glad you guys carried on. Sorry I was under the weather.
So do you have thoughts on Moonraker?
Oh, yeah. I hated Moonraker. I thought it was absolutely terrible. I was bored. I thought it was completely unoriginal, and I thought Roger Moore looked totally uninterested. It made no sense, and I couldn't even get on board with like campy fun. It was awful.
So can we pretty much cookie cutter that into this movie?
Oh, one final thought about Moonraker. It made me want to watch the movie Ronin again. Because the dude that played Drax in that was in Ronin, like in a really small part, and he was so good. He had some scenes with De Niro.
Lonsdale?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was a really good villain.
He was a good actor. He did not get to do much.
Well, yeah. This movie, For Your Eyes Only, is actually a direct reflection on Moonraker. Even though Moonraker made plenty of money, fans and critics pretty much blasted Moonraker for being way over the top. So on purpose, they decided to scale this one back a little bit and have less gadgetry and more scenery. And so this is like a almost a mirror of On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
But don't you watch Bond for gadgetry?
Well, not this movie.
Yeah.
So, Brother Jay, For Your Eyes Only, set the stage for us since you're our Bond expert.
No, I don't want to.
You didn't like this movie?
No, this is not one of my favorite movies. In fact, I actually think this is a quite terrible movie of the Bond films. It ranks on the lower end for me, so it's difficult to watch because it's super long for how bad it is, and there's lots of bad things with it, and the plot is clunky and incoherent, and it's clearly taken from many novels because the reef scene where they're tied together and dragged through the water, that's from another movie and from another book.
Oh, exactly.
We've seen it before.
Yeah.
In fact, we've seen many parts of this movie before, which is why it's hard to watch. So by the time we get here, it just feels like they were phoning it in.
They were specifically phoning it in with the cold open.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say this right from the beginning. I enjoyed this movie a lot.
Did you?
I did. I thought this was a fun, fun movie.
It was better than Moonraker.
Yeah.
Watching these two movies back to back has been rough.
Okay, let's just talk about the cold open. So the cold open was designed because Roger Moore was not going to continue being Bond. So the whole idea was you were going to introduce the audiences to the new Bond, by having him show up in front of Tracy's grave and that whole thing.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was also a direct slap at Kevin McClory, who Kevin McClory had won the Thunderball suit, so they couldn't use Blofeld. They were forbidden from using Blofeld as the villain. So instead, they used the likeness of Blofeld, which I think that he ended up suing and getting something for that too. But they couldn't say the name Blofeld, and they killed him off in the cold open, unceremoniously. But it was goofy as hell, but I thought the helicopter work was great.
Yeah, I thought that was a good scene up until the end. The quippy line about, I'll buy you a delicatessen.
Yeah, that's just weird, but that was a specific weird line that Cubby Broccoli wanted to put in.
All out of stainless steel?
Yeah, do you understand where it comes from?
No.
No.
Okay, well, it came from like the 30s gangsters who would basically like make an offer you can't refuse. So they'd go to a deli person or whatever, and they'd joke that, you know, we'll buy you a delicatessen, you know, the kind with the stainless steel countertops. And Cubby Broccoli had heard that someplace and loved the line. So he throws that into Blofeld's dialogue. And I'm sure none of the writers were brave enough to tell him no. So it's just this line out of left field, which makes no sense.
So the fact that this cold open was a fuck you for losing the Thunderball lawsuit really makes it worse. I mean, without knowing that, it was just kind of dumb and head-scratching, the choices that they made. But hearing that, now it's just, it's self-indulgent buffoonery.
Oh, indeed.
At the expense of the audience.
Well, except that I think it provides that really nice helicopter stunt scene. It gives you that big James Bond stunt that you're looking for in a cold open.
Yeah, no, the stunt was great, but then you're distracted by the fact that they won't show Blofeld's face for some reason. It's weird. It's weird to watch if you don't know why they're doing it. It's really distracting. And then after like a really perilous scene to end it with such a goofy way, by dropping a little dude wearing a Play-Doh bald cap off the helicopter, is not a satisfying way to start the movie. And really, I think did the movie a disservice because it made you prepared for something that the movie is not.
Well, and also it follows the trope of evil genius that falls short because the evil genius has manifested a way for this helicopter to be completely remote controlled, but forgets that it can be easily disabled by the yanking of a cord.
Well, and at any time, he could have just crashed the helicopter into the ground.
Right. Like the way any Bond villain could just shoot and kill Bond instead of setting up some elaborate death for him to escape.
Exactly. So what's a thing? Okay, so you guys both didn't like the cold open.
No, I hated it.
And then we have the Adriatic Sea, where the trawler gets hit by a mine.
Which seems kind of ridiculous. You have this super secret ship that's doing all this fine work, and they're not smart enough to avoid a mine.
Well, there was actually real things that happened off the coast of Albania, where ships were sunk after World War II during espionage.
Well, sure, but you have ostensibly an intelligence ship. No one is going to be skilled on the ship to know, ooh, it's a mine. We probably shouldn't drag it towards the ship.
Well, again, it's posed as a trawler hauling in fish. I don't know. Again, so you didn't like it.
I actually I like this scene. Again, I was already cranky because of that stupid cold open, but this part of the movie brought me back. Because I thought it was really interesting. I mean, it was silly to have... It's silly in a Bond way to have, like, all this super secret stuff posing as an active fishing ship. But it was interesting, at least. Even though, you know, the technology wasn't really convincing because it's so dated. But, the weird touches, like the technicians having to be handcuffed to their station, And at first, I was like, that seems really dumb and counterproductive. But then you see why later. So I thought that was actually, this scene was crafted really well. And it was paid off, which I quite enjoyed.
It had another one of those slidey compartments like the other big mm-hmm. ship scene.
But yeah, the fact that this guy was handcuffed to the station in the event that this ship started to capsize, that he couldn't get thrown away from it, so he would still be in reach of the self-destruct button.
And yet he still fell short. He only had one job! One job!
Well, it turns out that chain was too long.
Yeah, it's a design flaw. So, we're going to skip the actual theme for just a second, because then we...
Well, I had a question about the theme, though. Isn't this the first opening thing where we actually see the performer?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And I love this theme song.
It's okay.
Do we ever see another performer?
I think, if I remember correctly, I believe we see Tina Turner.
Nice.
In GoldenEye.
Yeah, so then we go, and this is the movie that I think I edited it out, but I had confused the two movies, and I thought M didn't appear in Moonraker. Now, it turns out this is the only movie without M in it, because Bernard Lee had died. So instead we have M's replacement that comes in, and they enlist Bond to go and find a way to get the ATAC computer back. And then we see a scene where we have a small plane that lands in the Adriatic Sea. Oh, wait, hold on. Oh, now I'm sorry. My notes say that this is supposed to happen in France. So, anyway, the small plane lands around this big ship. And we see the Bond girl, Melina, played by Carol Bouquet. And she is daughter of Timothy Havelock, who is an underwater archaeologist who happens to work for MI6 also, trying to find this ATAC computer thing that's sunk. But anyway, we see the scene where she arrives, and then her parents get gunned down and killed. And at the end of the machine gunning of her parents, you have this long scene that focuses in on her eyes. And that was supposed to be the cold open. That's why that scene is so long.
That explains why they linger.
Exactly, because they linger on her face. It was supposed to go from her eyes right to the cold open.
It also fits so much better tonally with the rest of the movie.
Yeah, because the movie is about vengeance.
Yeah. That would have been a much better choice than the masturbatory pseudo-Blofeld open.
But I don't know about you, but I like this theme song.
It's not a bad theme song. It's not the best.
At least it's not Shirley Bassey.
Exactly. Who was fine.
Wait a minute.
But how many times do you hear a riff on Moon River? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but she's... Okay, but she's not writing them. She's only a performer.
Oh, no, I don't have anything against Shirley Bassey. Not at all. She does a fine job. But yeah, again, how many times are you going to get a riff on Moon River?
I like... Maybe this is the start of it. They kind of did it with Live and Let Die, but then they went back to Shirley Bassey. But I like the fact that the Bond themes have sort of become their own event. You know, like who's going to do the next theme? I mean, now they're Oscar nominated and Oscar winning just about every time out.
Well, and you know who was, there was another theme for this movie.
Pray tell.
It's the Blondie version.
I had no idea, yeah. Which is surprising because I'm a huge Blondie fan.
Was it ever released?
I don't know if it was released, but it definitely is available.
Both have our orders.
you know, Spectre had some issues with their theme.
Yeah, wasn't that, who was that, Sam Smith or something?
Yeah, Sam Smith is what ended up in the movie, but Radiohead created one, and and I actually really liked the Radiohead one. Really well, and I like the Sam Smith version too, but I'm a Radiohead fan, so I like Radiohead better than Sam Smith, but I thought Radiohead's theme would have been perfectly fine.
Didn't Sam Smith win the Oscar?
Oh, probably. Did you hear that they were talking, this is our first tangent, you know, you've heard of the EGOT?
Mm-hmm.
Lin-Manuel Miranda is pretty much lined up to be the first McPeagot. If you add the fact that he's a MacArthur Fellow and is also a...
Pulitzer.
Got a Pulitzer, yeah. And if he doesn't get the Oscar for Moana, he's going to get an Oscar at some point.
For Mary Poppins?
We may have to wait for we have to wait till the Hamilton movie comes in, maybe. But, yeah. That guy. There's no stopping that guy.
So, a pirated version of Hamilton, the musical, showed back up on YouTube. So, I may have watched it about 12 times.
Was it the original cast?
Yes. Shot, like, by some dude in the mezzanine.
Wow.
Like, with people walking in front of him and stuff, coming back from intermission. So it's a horrible recording, but it's interesting to watch. And, Lin-Manuel Miranda is a brilliant songwriter and a visionary creative. But, as a performer, he's the worst part of Hamilton.
How so?
You know, he's an okay singer and an okay actor. And they cast such transcendent talents to fill out the rest of the cast that he's just not up to par.
So you're getting an opportunity to see it with a different cast might be actually a positive.
Maybe. I'm still bummed I won't get to see the dude that played George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the original Aaron Burr.
Oh, he may be back. We'll see.
Hope so.
Yeah, I know who's not going to be playing in it. Alan Thicke.
Oh. Alan Thicke, come on, man.
Too soon, man. Too soon.
Back to For Your Eyes Only. We have Bond, who is ordered to go find the ATAC. And they say that, okay, Milena's parents were gunned down by a hitman named Hector Gonzalez. And so he's got to go to Spain and interrogate Gonzalez for information. So Bond arrives at the coolest party in Spain.
Hey,
Isn't this the most awesome party ever?
It was a pretty glorious party.
The pool party with the guys in the Speedos, and they're playing some sort of like paddle tetherball and dancing to funky disco music.
Everyone looked like they're having a pretty good time.
And Bond sneaks in his typical elderly Bond Roger Moore fashion. At first, I thought maybe the girl kissing on the guard was somebody related to Bond, but no. Apparently, that was just happening.
I thought the same thing. I thought that maybe that she was a henchman or an agent, a local agent coming to his aid.
No, just a chick. So Bond arrives, and it's pretty much immediately caught. After we find out that there's this mysterious man played by Michael Goddard. In an elegant suit and octagonal wireframe glasses. We're just going to refer to him as Warren Zevon. Because that's how I thought of him. So Warren Zevon shows up to pay off Gonzalez for the hit.
And that's who they're really after, is they're trying to figure out who hired him, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, he's the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, he's the guy that Bond has been hired to go waterboard for information, pretty much. But he doesn't get the chance because he is captured and basically ordered executed by Gonzalez, who is sweet. He's a ladies' man of sorts. He opens this big old suitcase of money and throws a brick of it to a lovely lady next to him. So anyway, he goes to take a dive in his pool and gets shot by an arrow, a crossbow bolt, as we find out. And Bond gets to karate chop his way out of danger there.
Do you think that's his own line of like 007 leisure suits?
Perhaps, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure the inside lining is all just 007s and mm-hmm. Paisleys.
There's some kind of agency issue.
No, I think it's his own endeavor.
His side project.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part of that scene, I thought, was that Warren Zevon goes by and collects all the money, including the one from the girl. His little henchman grabs the money out of the lady's hand, which I thought was hilarious.
Did it look to you like Bond was being apprehended by Agent Rod Stewart?
I could see that. So we have this little shenanigans.
What a great way to yada yada like every Bond movie. and then there were some shenanigans.
I was wondering perhaps if there was some France influence again in this movie because the car chase was involving Peugeots and Citroën.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. This Malena is the actress is French, and they're supposed to be vacationing near France. But I'm pretty sure that this was all actually it's supposed to be Spain, but it was all shot in Corfu, in the Greek Isles, because they just used one location, I think. There were some problems with location shooting in this movie. I mean, not in a bad way. I think it came out just fine. It was beautiful. And I like the car chases. I like the, the whole thing where his Lotus gets blown up was another kind of nod to the fact that he was going to have to not rely on gadgets.
It was kind of ridiculous overkill, though, that they smash the window and the car explodes. That seems a little bit...
It did seem really dangerous.
Disproportionate.
Also, yeah, I don't know about you, but I noticed that the Lotuses have flat windshields. They don't curve. They're just flat pieces of glass,
mm-hmm.
which is weird. And, of course, one wiper, but that that's not so unusual. But, yeah, the flat glass was freaking me out a little bit. And because in Europe, they don't have the same standards that Americans require for vehicles, so you never know if you're going to have that safety coating on the windows on vehicles overseas. Like, conceivably, you can have big, gigantic shards of glass from the passenger windows because maybe there's not a requirement to have the special tempered coated glasses, or glass, rather.
Oh, safety standards. Ah.
And it was, of course, 81, so this is like a 70s Lotus, but still. And I don't know about you, but I don't think the Lotus holds up as a pretty car.
No, it looks terrible. But, again, I don't think it looked all that great to begin with anyway, so I don't have a high opinion of Lotus.
It actually looks super cheap. It looks really plasticky and low end. So you're right. It did not age well.
At least we didn't have to see it submarine.
Well, I like the Citroën chase. It was goofy. I mean, it was completely goofy. And seeing all those people, like, what are they, picking olives?
I thought they were nuts.
Yeah, I thought they were pistachios.
No, I was pretty sure they were olive trees.
Well, could have been.
I could be wrong, but...
Maybe some listeners should fill us in.
Yes, yes. Anybody in Corfu? Or... Yeah, anywhere, pretty much. we take Spinard.
Or Mom.
By the way, I bought a movie that we could actually review at some point. It's the Tundra movie.
No.
The Tundra movie?
The one done by Chad Carpenter of Tundra fame.
Oh, really? I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yep. It's called Moose, I think.
It's been discussed on the podcast before.
Yeah. I bought a copy of it from Chad himself.
Nice.
And Mom was trying to say, you should tell him about it. You should tell him you're going to do a blog on it. I'm like, shut up, Mom. I'm talking to the cartoonist. He already knows I'm shopping with my mom. Anyway.
Be nice.
No. It was fine.
She's proud of you.
Oh, I know. I know. No, I'm happy that she's proud.
Tell your mother to shut up. You shut up.
No, I didn't tell her to shut up. I just gave her that
look.
You
just thought it. Like, Mom, you're embarrassing me.
Have you seen the Patton Oswalt movie, Big Fan?
No.
No.
It's really dark, but it's got some funny parts. So yeah, so anyway, either nuts or olives, one of the two. I thought they were nuts too, but I think they said they were olives. And I'm not sure how olives that are not brined come off a tree pretty hard. I don't know. That may be a thing. So did you like the Citron chase?
Yeah, it was okay. It's kind of ridiculous.
I thought it was fun, but yeah, with like most Bond chases, it went on a little too long.
What'd you think about Melina as a Bond girl?
I thought she was fine. I mean, she was strong, a strong character.
Sometimes. She right. had tone problems all her own. So sometimes she was really strong. Sometimes she was just a damsel in distress. And yeah, she needed to pick a lane and stay in it.
Yeah. Well, again, this movie had, I think maybe it's the producers that have heavy influence in this from a tone perspective. I don't know how much influence they have in the editing, but anyway, so Melina, it turns out to be the crossbowing lady. So she's less a damsel in distress in this situation and more of a daughter getting vengeance for the death of her parents. By the way, Roger Moore said this, the Citroën was his favorite Bond car.
You're kidding.
She fared, Melina, is that her name? Melania?
Melina, I think.
Melina. She fared a lot better than, was it in the Connery movie, You Only Live Twice, where the sister was seeking vengeance? Ninja style.
Yes.
And then, like 2 minutes later, she was just murdered and Bond didn't give a shit.
Yep. But she wore that cat suit, I think, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes. So, yeah, she fared a lot better than that lady.
Yeah. So, Bond goes back to London and he gets chewed out by MI6 because he was supposed to go and interrogate Gonzales. And instead, he's accused of perforating him or letting him be perforated. But that's when Bond says, no, but we got information. We're looking for Warren Zevon. What did you think of the identigraph?
I thought it was ridiculous. Why did they have to go into a room and then turn on a red light like they were developing film?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I love the fact that those big platters, those are like real like computer disks of the time.
Electronic tapes.
Yeah, they would hold 1 meg of data.
I thought it was amazing. I mean, he just described what he remembered, and they got a perfect picture of this dude.
On a pretty good quality dot matrix printer, really.
Very good quality dot matrix printer.
Yeah. And we find out that this guy is Emile Locke, a Belgian assassin, who works for numerous crime syndicates, including he has some things going on in Cortina in northern Italy. So that's where Bond has to travel to Cortina. Where he meets Luigi, who's an Italian Secret Service agent, who says that Locke may be associated with an organization called the White Dove.
And Luigi likes to creep around in dudes' bathrooms, right?
Yeah, Luigi is kind of a creeper. But the thing, the cool thing about Cortina is now we're in the mountains again and we get to ski.
Oh my God, another skiing.
Yeah, Roger Moore must like really dig like pretending to ski while strapped onto a camera rig.
Exactly, because he couldn't ski very well.
Ice machine.
Yes. Yes.
Take a shot. They actually did, listeners.
So yeah, so we end up like again, we end up skiing.
After the secret steamy mirror message.
Yes. Again, low tech spycraft.
And Bond meeting the skiing protege. You think that might come up later?
The skiing protege, you mean, or the ice skater?
I'm sorry, ice skating protege.
Yes.
My mistake.
BB.
Yes.
Who we've got some age problems in this movie, although I think she acted it just fine. But she is supposed to be about 16 years old.
Yeah, okay. So that was a question I had, because she was acting really young, but then they really sexualized her with Bond.
Oh, yeah. No, she's supposed to be really young and really super sexual. But in real life, the actress is actually 1 year younger than Melina, than the actress who plays Melina. And even though she says that Christados, who is her, what, mentor, not mentor, what, sponsor.
Sponsor.
Yes. She says that Christados is too old for him. Actually, the character who played Christados is 8 years younger than Roger Moore. So, again, we've got some time issues, but that's okay.
Did you recognize Christados?
I did not, but apparently is Christados and another guy in this movie actually in Game of Thrones?
Yes, Grand Maester Pycelle.
Yeah, so we've got Christados, and then he identifies the White Dove leader as Milos Columbo, who's played by Kayam Topol, who just goes by Topol in the credits.
Wasn't Topol some kind of toothpaste?
Yes, yes, I think
smoker's
it was
toothpaste,
the smoker's
right?
Toothpaste, yes.
Right.
See this ugly yellow stain? It comes from cigarette smoke.
And this from pipe or cigar smoke.
Smoking can stain teeth badly.
For that, there's Topol, the smoker's tooth polish, that helps remove all kinds of superficial tobacco stains.
Topol has a unique formula with three ingredients to clean and polish your teeth.
And it's tested and proven gentle for everyday use.
Use Topol and watch your teeth get brighter and brighter.
And what was he best known for?
Topol? Yeah. You tell me.
Filler on the Roof?
Okay, I did not know that. So you basically set up this thing where Christados is the guy feeding Bond information and Columbo is the bad guy, heroin dealer, smuggler. And we meet BB, who's the protege, and then, of course, BB's trainer. And we have that whole thing where BB tries to seduce Bond and Bond is not really having it.
Thank God.
Yeah, Bond has some sort of morals. But BB points out a friend of hers, Eric Kriegler, who's a biathlete.
I didn't think a friend. I thought she was just a fan.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You're right.
He's East German, right? East German biathlete?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
She is warm for his form.
He had a nice form.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And could ski very well, too.
He spent much of the last half of the movie topless.
Well, what did you think of the ski elements in this movie?
That was ridiculous.
You didn't enjoy it? You know, the stuntman was actually, was he killed or just seriously hurt during the bobsled scene?
Oh, I believe it. That looked really dangerous.
Yeah, because we have a motorcycle, a skier, and a bobsled all going down a bobsled run.
Now, did the motorcycle have a ski on it?
Oh, in the actual... I mean, not, it wasn't supposed to.
I think there were some shots where it did, where the front wheel had a ski on it.
Oh, well, maybe. That's interesting. But yeah, no, it's just supposed to have those spiky tires. Originally, these are supposed to be snow machines, but...
I thought this was a fun chase that went on too long.
Most of the chase scenes in this movie went on too long.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I will go out on a limb and say all of the chase scenes in this movie went on too long.
You guys didn't like this movie. Wow. I was enjoying it. I watched this movie twice in a week. after seeing it about a month ago, just kind of try to get ahead a little bit. So, yeah, so after that, we go to Greece and end up at a nightclub and then a...
more baccarat.
Yes, Sweevy. And we meet a countess again, much like On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
There's a lot of On Her Majesty's Secret Service in here.
Oh, no, there is a ton.
Wasn't his wife an ice skater? Wasn't there an ice skating scene with her?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, well, they have that whole ice skating, ice rink thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot to like, again, in this movie.
A lot of callbacks. In this movie.
There you go. Yeah, and there's, of course, the beach scene.
It's almost like this movie is parroting other movies.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah, so we have Countess Liesel, who, by the way, do you know who plays Countess Liesel?
No.
Cassandra Harris. And who is Cassandra Harris in history?
No idea.
Pierce Brosnan's wife.
Oh, wow.
The one who died?
Yes. Yes, yeah, the one who he held her hand all for years while she died of cancer or something. Yeah, she introduced Pierce Brosnan to Cubby Broccoli during this movie. But anyway... So we have the weird thing where she's play acting really poorly, but Columbo sets her to find out about Bond, but she instantly just tells Bond that that's what he's trying to do.
Did you feel bad that she really took advantage of that guy with the fucked up eye?
Yes. Yeah, the guy with the fucked up eye, he was not having a good night.
He was until she she started to manipulate him.
Yeah, well.
But I guess that was her job. She was actually employed to do that.
A professional shill. Yeah. And in the morning, after their night of lovemaking, after he discovers that she's from Liverpool, they're on the beach having like a post-coital or post-romantic, just kind of fun morning walk on the beach. And then all of a sudden the doom buggies come in and she is gruesomely killed.
Do you ever have that not so fresh feeling?
Oh, man. And, you know, and the stunt woman was also injured during that the scene where she smashes her head on the windshield of the doom buggy.
Yeah. It looked brutal.
Yes, it was brutal.
Is this another Bond theme that I never knew about? Like, the first woman he sleeps with gets horribly murdered? Because back-to-back movies.
Could be.
Well, there's a running theme of him humping it out and them dying.
Yeah, lots of Bond girls die, that's for sure.
Yeah.
At least the Countess wasn't eaten by dogs.
Some undocumented 007 STD.
Yeah, so we have Locke and Klaus. And Locke is the one that kills Liesel by running her down. And he and Klaus capture Bond. But all of a sudden, Klaus is shot by a harpoon. And several White Dove emblem surfers capture Bond. And Bond gets captured a lot. Once a movie, pretty much. So, he ends up on this yacht, and he ends up talking to Columbo, who tells him that he's the real good guy, and Christatos is the bad guy. And he's going to prove it by taking Bond to Albania to see this heroin trade.
I really like Columbo in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I thought the pistachios were silly, but yeah, I like the character. Super charming.
When he's put in ridiculous situations, as much as possible, he sort of acts like a real person. You know, like later in the movie, and they're like, oh, we have to go to that monastery at the top of a mountain. You know what? You should climb. I'm just going to wait here.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have the fight on the ship where it's, again, the jumpsuited guys on Bond's side fighting the jumpsuited guys on the other side. It was more like sailor wear, but it was pretty much, you know, in that trope. And we have the explosion that Locke sets up.
Yeah, shooting bullets all around a mine? Like, that's a good idea?
Yeah, well, no, it turned out not to be a good idea.
Yeah.
And also, Bond racing a car, you know, 105-year-old Roger Moore running upstairs and beats a car driving up the same hill.
That was ridiculous.
And this is a part where Roger Moore did not like the scene where he ends up killing Locke. He eventually agreed with the director and the producer that that was a James Bond thing to do, but he said it wasn't a Roger Moore thing to do by kicking the guy off the cliff like that. He thought it was a punk move.
Didn't he kill a guy by taking his tie away?
Yeah. Well, there's that, yes.
We're releasing the tie, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he kills Warren Zevon.
No more Werewolves of London.
No.
He doesn't even interrogate him first.
Oh, no.
He just throws the pin. Ding!
He's not even like, hey, tell me who you're really working for. He's just like, I don't give a shit anymore.
Phoning it in.
Enjoy every sandwich. Anyway, Bond and Melina go back to her parents' yacht. And this is another part that Roger Moore didn't like. The fact that he finds out important clues from the parrot.
What's not to like about that?
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous. And, of course, we have... I thought that was silly that Melina was the only person that could read her father's shorthand.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how the handwriting looks and what kind of strange codes that they were doing. And if she grew up with it, anybody could have their own code.
I suppose, but...
Do you think you would be able to read our father's shorthand?
No. I will say right off the top, no.
I can't read his writing sometimes if it's just plain.
Yeah, I've got the book that comes with the expedition. I can barely read the odometer notes. Yeah, that's not true. That's but yeah. No, the answer is no. How about you? You've worked professionally with the man. You've probably seen his professional notes.
We live in a world of email.
Ah, good times. So we have this stuff with the submarine. What do you think about the submarine stuff?
Ridiculous. So they have to work out this air mixture and this complicated mathematics and making sure they have the right amount of air and the right amount of time, and they can go down to this depth, but they can expose their hands underwater.
That's the part you found ridiculous.
Oh no, that's just one of the parts I found ridiculous. But I'm just. You have to start somewhere.
Well, how about the trained archaeologist lady that just leaves her scuba tank on the bottom for no reason?
Well, because you'll need it later. Wasn't for no reason. Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Also, would the scuba tank still be there? I mean, maybe they're pretty heavy, but you'd think it'd have to be secured against something because there are, you know, currents and things.
It's pretty heavy, though.
I was okay with the submarine scene. I mean, they had at least set it up a little bit before with him noticing the diving suit and the bad guy's lair. But what really took me out of the movie was realizing that the MacGuffin that they were after is like a Fisher-Price cash register.
Exactly. That they don't treat with any particular care.
No. That I found that to be very distracting.
But this was exactly the same kind of MacGuffin they had, like the Lecter unit they had. And what was it? Which movie was the Lecter unit in?
I don't even remember.
They all blur together.
Yeah, that is not ringing a bell at all to me.
No, it's like Dr. No or one of the ones, original ones, where From Russia with Love. That's what it was.
Did I watch that one?
Well, Jason and I did. I know that.
Yeah, From Russia with Love.
So, yeah, so we have this whole finding the ATAC unit and then the bomb and that is supposed to be on the unit to destroy it. They have to get that, and then they're attacked by the bad guy in the gym suit and they barely make it out. And they get attacked by another mini sub-on-sub violence.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Wow, I can't believe you guys didn't like this movie. This is shocking.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It was hard to sit through.
So from your memory, are we getting good ones coming up, or is it going to be a slog for a little
bit? Well, I really, really used to love A View to a Kill, so I hope it doesn't suck.
We've got Octopussy to get through before A View to the Kill, right?
Yeah, Octopussy's okay. So hopefully it's okay, but like I said, I have a fond remembrance for View to a Kill, so I hope it doesn't suck.
Yeah. Is that the last Moore movie?
I think so.
Yeah, so we know we have two Moores left, and then two Daltons and four Brosnans?
Sounds right.
So, we will be done by June. The question is whether we want to revisit, with all three of us, the Daniel Craig movies.
Maybe a quick 5-10 minute synopsis of each movie, but I don't think we need to do anything in depth.
And then we need to talk about Spectre at some point.
Yeah.
No. Oh. So by the end, we'll be just like, just get this fucker over with. We'll put in the last, we'll put in all the Pierce Brosnans in one episode.
Those might be my favorites.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. We're coming up on the time where we're going to discover our first Bond movies that we've seen. And like I said, the girls are, it's coming into to more of what I think of as not, is like actually attractive Bond girls instead of old-timey retro Bond girls.
You mean like Grace Jones?
No. Wait, isn't Tanya Roberts a Bond girl too at some point?
I don't know who that is.
Tanya Roberts?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get there. We need to go on a Tanya Roberts marathon.
I'm looking at some Bond minutia, and so Timothy Dalton. So yes, you're right. We have Octopussy is the next one, View to a Kill, and then Living Daylights and License to Kill, which are both Dalton flicks.
Oh wait, are we doing Never Say Never Again?
If we did, we'd have to be soon, right?
It came out the same year as Octopussy, I think.
Yeah, so it would be in the same timeline as the next one. Can we find it anywhere?
I don't know. You're right, there's four Brosnan films. GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, and Die Another Day. So Brosnan's salary, so for the four films, $4 million, $8 million, $12 million, $16 million. And then they go to the Craig, which is $3.4 million, $8.9 million, $17 million, and $39 million. That's staggering.
Will he be a $50 million man for the next one?
Who knows? Well, and they still haven't decided if he's going to be in the next one.
Exactly.
Which it's interesting that maybe they turn over the new Bonds just because the old Bonds get too expensive.
It's a possibility.
But I don't know. We'll see. It's very interesting. You know, he said that he was out, and then he said he wasn't out, and then he said he really didn't mean it. He was just tired from the last film, and yada yada. So it'll be very interesting to find out what the final verdict is, and if they who is going to be the next Bond. Like I said, I'd really like to see maybe a reimagining where they have a female Bond, but that changes a lot of the writing dynamics.
Well, here's a question. I mean, okay, so they've talked about Idris Elba. So
yeah, he would
have
be
the
awesome.
Black Bond. Yes, would be awesome. What would you think about an American Bond?
I don't. It has to be a British Bond. There can't be an American.
Yeah. Well, certainly. I'm not cool. I think as long as Barbara Broccoli is involved, it'll be a British person.
I don't want it to be American because it's the British Secret Service. So
lots of Americans have been up for the role. You know, Burt Reynolds was going to be a Bond.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, maybe.
Even Martin Freeman.
Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, Tom Hiddleston would be good.
Let's see, who else? Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
Idris Elba has been rumored.
Yeah.
He would be great.
Sure he would.
Just to listen to him talk.
Yeah.
Especially if he played him like Luther.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
I bet no. He skis really good.
I want him to play him like Stringer Bell. So, yeah, okay, so back to skiing real quick. Were you curious why the flower shop lady seemed to get a much bigger part than she should have?
I didn't pay any attention.
Do you remember the flower shop lady?
I remember it, because the motorcyclist came crashing through it, and he was like, send the flowers to the funeral.
Which is a cold-ass thing to say, by the way. She won a contest in Playboy to be a Bond girl. The prize was to appear in the movie, and she also got a Playboy pictorial.
Is that really considered a Bond girl when you have a bit walk-on part?
It's on her resume. She's a Bond girl and a patriot and a Christian, and I think she gives lectures now still.
No? Okay, then.
Yeah.
You've really done some research. I applaud your efforts.
I like this movie. I can't believe you guys didn't like this. It's going to be a rough go, I think, here for the next couple of movies, Bond movies. But, yeah, okay, so we find out from the parrot, which, again, is ridiculous, that the location of the ATAC machine is at St. Cyril's, of which there are like 400 of them or something.
Did you guys already discuss their underwater escape?
We just kind of yada-yadded it.
Okay. Shenanigans.
Exactly. Well, do you want to discuss it?
Nope. No, I mean, Jason already mentioned that it was cribbed from the previous movie. I don't even remember the title. The one you made us read the book for.
Yes. It was the Blaxploitation one, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Of course, the name is eluding me. Yeah, absolutely. Yaphet Kotto. Come on. What was that?
Live and Let Die.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should have known that because it had, voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Baron Samedi. Ugh. That had potential.
Why couldn't they bring Hervé Villechaize back instead of bringing Jaws back?
I think they should have brought Baron Samedi, Jaws, and Hervé Villechaize all back. I think they still can.
Well, except Hervé Villechaize is a little dead.
Oh, yeah. I think they're all dead. No, Jeffrey, whatever his name is he dead? Maybe he's dead, too. Maybe they are all dead. I think Richard Kiel died.
I believe so.
Yeah. Oh, well. Maybe the Bond cartoon.
But is the dude from Superman 2 still alive?
Exactly. Yeah, so then we end up at another big major set piece, but not a set as much as an outdoor setting. And that's this monastery, which, by the way, I don't know if you realize, but the monks were none too happy. And they were doing things like hanging all their laundry outside and putting like plastic tarps and stuff on the roof so that it would kind of destroy their shot.
That's funny.
Yeah.
The monks are supposed to be more mellow.
No, it turns out monks are not mellow. But they also, I guess they went all the way to the Greek Supreme Court to fight shooting at the monastery. And the Greek government, the Supreme Court, decided that the monks owned everything inside the monastery, but the outside of the monastery was all the property of the Greek government. But they wanted to film in the Parthenon, but the Greeks were not having that.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. So, you do what you can. And of course, Roger Moore has a problem with vertigo. So a lot of the climbing was done through camera trickery and stuntmen. Although he said he had to take Valium and a certain amount of beer to actually climb the climbing that he did.
I actually liked the climbing scene. I liked his tricky little knots to start climbing up the line. I thought the scene was put together really well. There was a lot of tension. I mean, Bond's not going to die, but it was still well shot. You wondered how he was going to get out of it. It was good. I liked it.
Did you notice the pigeon?
No.
After the pigeon double take in Moonraker, that became a thing, and they put John Glenn put a pigeon in all the Bond movies coming up.
Yeah, see, I remember the pigeon being in this movie. That's why I was surprised when it was in the last one.
So clever, I didn't even notice. Bless you.
Gesundheit.
He's going to be okay.
I'm going to be okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
I got it. Ah, Heidi, you need a Kleenex.
Oh, I love Wolfgang. I really do. So, we end up with I guess, I don't know, we can pretty much yada yada the fight. And they end up destroying the ATAC machine.
I thought the fights were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like with him and the East German skier dude.
Yeah.
Melania just shoots another dude with an arrow. And for some reason, they don't kill him. They just leave him there to be miserable.
So what did you think? Of course, we have the typical Bond ending. Well, not typical, but he's going to go out in his skinny dip with Melina, and they leave the Margaret Thatcher impersonator. What did you think of that ending, where they actually show the Prime Minister and her husband?
Terrible.
This was an ending that matches the cold open. It's an entirely different movie. It's so dumb. Like, just when you think the movie's redeemed itself, you know, I like Topol. You know, I like the ending. You know, the final action was pretty good. And then they just got to go shove another middle finger right in your face.
Yep.
Very disappointing.
And, yeah, so that's pretty much For Your Eyes Only. So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
Don't watch this movie.
Oh, harsh. So, Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, it's, you know, the middle part of this movie, I think, is pretty good. It's got some goofy stuff. Not as goofy as Moonraker. I think my experience watching this movie really suffered by watching them back-to-back so closely. I think if this had had some space, it would have been better. And if they hadn't gone with such a stupid cold open and ending, I think it would have been way more palatable. So, I mean, I think it's worth it. This is probably one of the better Roger Moore movies, I think, that I've seen so far.
Well, yeah, so, for me...
Not a...
I'm sorry, I stepped on you.
I was going to say, that's not a very ringing endorsement, though.
See, for me, the Spy Who Loved Me was such a dud. And Moonraker was the campy follow-up that I thought was fun because it was so campy. It was over the top, so you just kind of had to let yourself either enjoy it or not. I mean, you're going to have a bad time. If you didn't like it, you hated it. But if you're along for the ride, I thought it was just fine. And then this, I thought, was a nice sort of happy medium where you got some of the goofiness. And yeah, the cold open was a poor choice. And the ending was too goofy. But it did bookend the cold open. So if that's what you were going for, is the crazy tonal shifts. I mean, I would have, of course, I always, for some reason, I always like, and I don't have any problem with Bond getting laid, but I want my heroines to be like Quantum of Solace.
In what way?
Well, like Melina was there for revenge. There's no reason why she had to fall in love with Bond. If anything, Bond was like a father figure telling her that when you, you know, reminding her of the Confucianism that, When you set out for revenge, you must dig two graves.
Yeah. With the economy of characters in this movie, it was either going to be her or the 16-year-old.
Oh, that's true, yes. So that was the right choice.
Agreed.
Oh, but they threw a countess in the middle.
Yeah, but they killed her.
Well, yeah, that's what you had to do. Can't kill the 16-year-old. I mean, I guess you could have, actually.
Killing him off prevents him from getting knocked up, I suppose.
The Bond abortion. It's illegal in Ohio now. Anyway, so yeah. So, any other final thoughts on this movie before we go to housekeeping?
No, but let's stick with the Bond themes for a moment. We were talking about Bond themes. So, Skyfall was the first Bond theme to win an Oscar.
That seems about right.
And then...
That was Adele?
Yes. And then Sam Smith won for The Writings on the Wall from Spectre.
Which I didn't like.
You didn't like the movie or you didn't like the theme?
I thought the movie was fine. I thought the theme wasn't very good.
Yeah, the theme was okay.
I didn't like the Jack Black one either, so...
Quantum of Solace?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was a crap film. I did like the Chris Cornell film, Casino Royale.
Yeah, I thought the Chris Cornell song was fine.
Over Over the years, only three other songs from James Bond have been nominated: Live and Let Die, Nobody Does It Better, and For Your Eyes Only.
Well, we have some coming up that are questionable, but we'll just get to them naturally in the course of things.
Madonna, Die Another Day.
Yes.
Tina Turner, Goldeneye. Garbage, Shirley Manson, The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
And The World Is Not Enough is a great video, by the way. So,
is The World Is Not Enough the one with Halle Berry? Or is it the one with Denise Richards?
No, I think it's Denise Richards.
Well, hold on. Who was in Goldeneye?
Or is it the one with Michelle Yeoh?
Don't know. I don't even know if Michelle Yeoh was in one of them, but I'll go with it. Are you making it up?
No.
I have no idea.
Denise Richards is The World Is Not Enough.
Okay. Okay. Which one
Robbie Coltrane.
Which one was Halle Berry in?
Well, it was a Brosnan one, so.
Michelle Yeoh was in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Ah.
Which I think we saw in the movie together with our parents.
Die Another Day. Halle Berry, Die Another Day.
Okay. We have a wide variety of stuff coming up.
We do.
Yeah. Okay, so housekeeping.
Good job on the Storm Large drop-in.
Oh, yeah, it was a gigantic drop-in, but...
Oh, so good.
But it gave you a feeling for what she's doing, so...
Well, we took an Uber to the concert because... It was ice storm apocalypse. There was no way I was going to drive my new vehicle. I would rather have wrecked somebody else's vehicle than my own. So we made it to the venue, and it was a pretty awesome concert. I'd say about 80% of the people showed up. And so it's Travis and Jesse and I. And the great thing that Storm Large did, because she is awesome, she basically opened the performance by saying, I realized that a lot of people couldn't make it tonight because of the weather. And so I'll tell you what, take out your phones, take out your cameras, record as much as you want and post it on the internet, post it on Facebook, post it everywhere. Just make sure you tag us so that we can give credit for it. But, you know, we just make it so that the people that missed it can see it. So I think I posted on Facebook. If you go, you can actually watch the opening drag queen who comes out and heckles the audience and basically embarrasses Jesse for 5 minutes.
Nice.
So, and then makes a reference to my genitalia.
Oh, yes. Okay. Copy that.
But it was a really great concert. So good, but good job on the drop in. Plus it's a great segue to Grease. So well done.
Thank you.
Good editing as always, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I work on it. Let's see, what else? Drew, any housekeeping?
I've got something. I don't remember if I talked about this, but shout out to the husband of one of our listeners, Alan. He's been helping me through some work stuff lately, and I was chatting with him at his place of work. And it was just one of those surreal moments where he started talking about the podcast. And it's like the only time that it has randomly popped up like in my normal civilian life. So it was kind of jarring and surprising, but flattering.
Yeah, fun.
So I've been working with him quite a bit the past couple of weeks, and he has been great. So shout out to Alan.
Cool. Any other shout outs? Any other thing, fun things? Looking forward to Brother Jay in person. Ice.
Ice indeed.
Baby.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.